And how do we know that they can do it? Well, because some teachers believed they could, and so they took the time and the trouble to teach them this, quote, harder, unquote, stuff that, you know, earlier workers had thought those kids could never learn. But they could learn, but only if you taught them.
I'm Trevor.
I'm Alex.
Welcome to the Learner Lab podcast presented by TrainUgly.com.
Each week, something new that can help us learn.
Let's go! Where do we start with this? Probably the rat study. Yep. So what was the rat study?
The rat study was a study that Robert Rosenthal.
My name is Bob Rosenthal. I'm teaching at the University of California, Riverside. I've been here 20 years, by the way, and I was for 37 years at Harvard before that.
Robert Rosenthal labeled all the different rats in his study. He labeled some rats as smart and some rats as dumb.
And half of the experimenters were told, "We've assigned you maze-bright rats that have been specially bred for brightness running mazes," and a random half of the experimenters, the other half, were told, we've gotten a series of the famous Berkeley maze dull rats.
And they had no idea that he had arbitrarily labeled them. And then they ran the tests, ran them through the maze to see what happened, and they found that
The experimenters got the results they'd been led to expect. If they'd been expecting fast running, accurate running by rats in mazes, that's what they got. If they expected dull running, lots of errors, slow speed, then from their rats, that's what they got.
There was nothing different between them other than they'd been labeled differently.
Wow.
Yeah, those labels changed the expectations of the people, which changed the way that they treated the rats. And when they were treated differently, it changed the way the rats performed.
It turned out to be kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy.
And that's what's called the Pygmalion effect.
Basically, what it's saying is that the expectations we have can turn into self-fulfilling prophecies. And I think it's kind of an underrated topic, especially as far as like leadership and education and coaching is concerned, because the truth is we all have expectations. We're probably more interested in dealing with humans than rats.
Yeah, I'd agree.
And the cool thing is the Pygmalion effect works with humans, not just rats.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think maybe the more tangible study is the one they did with students. So I actually first saw this in The Culture Code by Dan Coyle, where he talks about a study that Rosenthal did. He went to like a California public school and he told this school, like, "I've come up with a better version of the IQ test."
Mm-hmm.
This
it was
test,
like the Harvard Inflected Acquisition
test.
Yeah,
they had like a really cool big name for it that made it sound fancy. And the idea was, this is a better test because it can identify students that are bloomers, the ones that are going to learn and grow the most over the next year. They might not have the best grades, but they have the biggest capacity for growth. So he tells the school about it and asks if he can administer the test to the students for free, and that he would even process the results and give it to the school for free. It's 1968, so the school's like, sure. And so he gives the students the test and processes the results, and then gave the school a list of 20 names. And these students were the 20 bloomers. Again, not the ones with the best grades now, but the ones that are going to grow the most over the next year, according to the results. Comes back a year later, and they administer the test again on the same students. And what they found with the group of second grade students is the bloomers' score went up 27 points over the course of the year, and the students not on the list, their scores went up 12. And I think with the first grade students, it was 17 and 7. So each one, a big gap between the bloomers and the other students. So then the school's like, what? Like, what characteristics are you searching for? Like, how did you predict this?
This test works.
Yeah. And come to find out, he just gave them some random test. It wasn't this fancy thing that Harvard invented.
It was just fake.
It was fake. Well, not fake. It was a real test. But the results were fake because he didn't even look at the results. He just gave the school a list of 20 random names. I think the interesting thing is, in this study, the students didn't know who was on the list or about the label of bloomer. This was the teachers were aware of the students on the list. What they found is it sort of changed the way the teachers treated the students and had a huge impact on their performance over the year. What they found is, like, if a student was struggling, but they were labeled a bloomer, the teacher would spend like more time with them and try to dig in like, oh, this student's a bloomer. We have to figure this out.
Right.
If a student's like not on the list and struggling, it's kind of like, eh, not a bloomer.
Not
whatever.
Supported. We're not going to spend the time here.
And so again, this is just describing that the label or expectations of the teachers had a big impact on the growth and development of the students. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't think it's magic. I don't think it's just something that happens for no reason. I think it's our expectations sort of change the way we treat people and sort of limits the opportunities we might give them.
Right.
Especially if we're in a leadership role.
Right.
They've seen like similar results of the Pygmalion effect in different arenas. Mm-hmm. I know I saw a study about how this impacts like the management and production of employees in the workplace. There was one about like a prison educational program.
Yeah, they brought someone in to teach a college level course to a group of prisoners. And the original expectation of the guards was that the course was too difficult for them. Only a few of them had high school diplomas or GEDs, but the teacher set high expectations and provided the right environment and opportunities for them to pass the class. At the end of the course, all students ended up with passing grades, which far exceeded the original expectations of the guards.
Right. So the sort of the higher expectation created a better environment where they were, number one, believed in, but then allowed to do the things right. That actually like helped them grow.
Right.
Yeah. How did the military one go?
So that one was the Israeli Defense Forces. Mm-hmm. So I guess they usually have two different types of training, and one's just the regular basic training, and then they have another type of training for forces who don't seem to be as fit for the regular basic training. Mm-hmm. But they had so many students that weren't, right, they're not really students, but they had so many people mm-hmm. who weren't fit for the basic training that they couldn't fit them in the kind of secondary training. Mm-hmm. So what they did is they just kept the people who were supposed to be in the secondary training, and they kept them in the basic training, but they didn't tell the teachers of basic training that they weren't quite qualified to be in basic training. And what happened is nothing changed. The dropout rates didn't change. They did just as well as right. everyone else. The average was fine.
You would expect the dropout rate to like increase
yeah.
because we have some
people who are expected
quote
to
unquote,
be
low performing yeah. people that can't handle this.
Exactly.
But it didn't change.
No.
So and in this scenario, it's like the leaders of the group, their label didn't change because they weren't aware of these additional people that were added into
right.
the group.
Right.
So there was no change.
Right. It was sort of like teasing
sure.
out
sure.
the Pygmalion effect. They're like trying to not get it to happen.
Right. Right. In a way. Right. Interesting. Now, this is something that I think we can all acknowledge plays out in the real world. And again, the argument here is like, look, we're trying to be realistic. Like, we're not saying every person in the group can be the best and every student's going to get straight A's. We're saying
that they have to be realistic.
Yeah.
And like, you can't just say something crazy and then expect that that'll happen.
Everyone is capable of growing. We have to provide equal opportunities for our people to do that. Yet so many times, like, the label we give limits those opportunities, and that's when it's a problem.
Right.
Like, this totally played out at one of the workshops I was doing a couple months ago. A parent came up and she said her daughter is a second grader and was recently diagnosed with dyslexia. And there was actually a profound change in how the teachers were treating her after the diagnosis. So there was times in class where she wasn't allowed to read. Like, the teacher said, quote, "You don't need to read this because you have dyslexia. You're not allowed to read aloud." When literally just 2 weeks ago, she was participating
in that
and reading aloud. Like, maybe she wasn't the best reader in the class,
right.
but she was provided the reps and opportunities
she to was still trying.
Practice reading.
Yeah.
And now because of the diagnosis, she was no longer allowed to like read aloud in the class. Perfect example of
right.
this. Like, again, she's not going to maybe be the best reader because this is a tough limitation
right.
or tough constraint to deal with, but to be completely robbed of the reps, like
yeah.
that's a problem.
Because she could probably get better at reading even with dyslexia if she was given the opportunity to do
yeah.
that, right?
And
but if you take the opportunity away,
you can't grow.
Yeah, there's no way.
So I think the most important angle here is to be aware of the labels and expectations we have and how those might limit the reps and opportunities of our people.
Mm-hmm.
The examples of this are everywhere. It's like, this is why I think the Pygmalion effect is why, like, a common story and label is like, oh, tall people in basketball can't really dribble. It's like, yeah, but it's because we're robbing them of reps.
Right. Like, it's because you have that belief, yeah, and it turns into a self-fulfilling prophecy.
The belief of the coach starting in sixth grade is like, oh, you're tall, go stand by the rim. Right. You're not allowed to dribble.
There's no need to practice dribbling because
you're tall.
Yeah, you're terrible
at it. And so like what's happening is the taller players, their reps of handling the ball are limited mm-hmm. because of the belief. And then it sort of becomes true. It's like, yeah, a lot of tall people struggle with dribbling.
Right.
But the proof that that's total falsehood is, hey, there's like 7 foot dudes in the NBA who have really great handles. Why? Because they've practiced the skill of ball handling.
Right.
Now, again, we're not saying like the center on the basketball team is going to go from not being able to dribble to playing point guard in one season. It's every player on the team can get better at skills if we're allowed to practice. Mm-hmm. Yet so many times, like the label or expectation gets in the way of that.
Right.
You've nailed it. That's exactly what I think happens, yeah. And there now have been literally hundreds, probably over 500 experiments, basically showed an overwhelming effect. And I have to give you a little vignette from my own undergraduate days as a student at UCLA. I took a course in exceptional children. And at that time, one of the categories of exceptional children that we studied were kids with Down syndrome. The things we learned, what we were taught, was a huge list of all the things those children could never learn. So, of course, none of us ever tried to teach all those things to these kids. But nowadays, the kids with Down syndrome are learning lots of those things that I was taught they could never learn. And how do we know that they can do it? Well, because some teachers believed they could, and so they took the time and the trouble to teach them this, quote, harder, unquote, stuff that, you know, earlier workers had thought those kids could never learn. But they could learn, but only if you taught them. I still think, wow, when I think about the way I was trained in my special ed course to believe all the things that couldn't be done by kids.
In the research that we dug up, there's a lot to this effect. And some people get into like these nonverbal cues that we give and how that can impact the performance of our people.
With the rats, the first one, I remember they focused specifically on the nonverbal cues of that.
Sure.
And that's an important part of it. But yeah. Rosenthal lays out three other factors in his four-factor model of how basically Pygmalion works.
And which so, is like how we can actually use this.
It's how we can use this stuff. Okay, so the four factors are climate, input, response, and feedback. And basically, climate just means like the nonverbal cues and sort of the environment that the teacher creates for the student or whatever superior might be.
Right.
And then the second one, input, that's the material being taught.
Mm-hmm.
So the third one is response, which is basically those reps, the opportunities to respond and to... Mm.
It was like even just like calling on them.
Yeah.
It's I'm more likely to call on a bloomer than a non-bloomer.
Right.
And that's just like limiting sort of the reps
right.
of the non-bloomers.
Completely.
Yeah.
The fourth one's feedback. And feedback is just that. Are you praised for your answers? And if a student's called on and then they give an answer, and if they're seen as like a bloomer, right, a special student, even if they give a wrong answer, this teacher will spend more time with them telling them why that answer is wrong. They'll give them actual feedback on that and how to improve. Whereas if it's a kid who hasn't been identified as a bloomer, they don't spend as much time with them.
Let me emphasize the first two. I summarize them with one word each, affect and effort. And by affect, what I mean is the teachers treated more favorably, more warmly, those students for whom they had more favorable intellectual expectations. That's the affect, the feeling part of it. The other part, the effort part, is the teachers just taught more material to the kids for whom they believed that new material was learnable.
And look, like no matter what we do, we're not going to see equal outcomes across the board.
Right, that's impossible.
Like, there's going to be some people better at stuff than others, regardless of the environment we create. But the idea here is we should provide like equal opportunities for people to grow. And I think that's something we could all acknowledge and do more of.
What we're saying is not that we have to set the expectation that everyone is going to get an A,
right,
or that everyone's going to succeed at the highest expectation.
Because that's
not going to
happen.
It's not going to happen. But what we are saying is that we can set the expectation that everyone can be a learner.
Everyone's a learner.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's capable of growth. And that can have a big impact on the way we treat people and the growth and development of our people. Boom.
If you're interested in digging a bit deeper into Pygmalion, there's a great book that Robert Rosenthal wrote himself called Pygmalion in the Classroom that kind of digs into his studies and everything that he learned.
Yep.
And then also, we're going to link to some other studies in the show notes if you're interested in more as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to this, and we're going to make sure that producer Jack provides you with all the links.
Now let's answer the questions from the hotline.
Hey, Trevor, I am so excited. I love all your online material, and I'm really excited for this new podcast. I'm a volleyball coach, and I wanted to know, are there differences in the types of motivation or sports psychology type techniques to use with female athletes as opposed to male athletes? And especially for training or for communication during game time.
Coming out of the gates with a difficult question here. Of course, there are differences between male and females as far as personality type and maybe preference. But the truth is there's differences between males within the system and females. And so I think my best advice is there's some good information about like our gender can influence the way we compete. And I saw some good stuff in the book Top Dog by Poe Bronson and Ashley Merriman, if you wanted to get into that. But like my suggestion is kind of like look more at the individual, like get to know your people.
Uh-huh.
Because if you're coaching boys or girls, they're going to be very different on the team.
Right.
So it's, I think, investing time to getting to know your people. This is something that Coach K does a lot of at Duke with the basketball team. Mm-hmm. This is Karch Karai with USA Volleyball. Lots of time spent in like one-on-one meetings getting to know your people.
Right.
So I think as we develop those relationships, we get better at finding the right ways to motivate or inspire them to take action.
So it's not even a male-female thing. It's just...
Yeah, it's like, again, people are different. Because they could be so different. It's like, so answer, step one is like, let's really get to know our people.
Right.
But then there are some like principles of motivation that are relevant to all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe how we get there would be different. It's like at the workshops I give, regardless of the audience, young, old, male, female, wherever, uh-huh, it's like we talk about the same stuff.
Right.
Like the way you get there might be different.
Right. You might change sort of the weaving into,
sure,
that area. But
as far as like principles of motivation, the best resource I know is a book called Drive by Daniel Pink.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about like how important it is to like feel like you're a part of something bigger than yourself. You need some autonomy. You need to feel like you matter. There needs to be like a vision or pursuit that you're on.
Uh-huh.
And that's just truth for humans. And so it's finding ways to get to know our people and then create this environment. So my best advice would be find the book Drive by Dan Pink. He also has a good TED Talk on YouTube that goes into sort of like what really drives people. And it's usually not what he calls carrots and sticks. It's not just rewards and punishment. Like we can do better than, mm-hmm, that.
It's a bit deeper than
create
that.
Create a better fuel source for the motivation. So of course, people that you lead and teach and coach are all different. It's like get to know them and then also understand sort of the mechanics of real motivation.
Mm-hmm.
You can see some short-term stuff with carrots and sticks, but we can go deeper. And I think Drive is a good resource.
During this question, she also asks for any tips between age groups. So older people versus,
sure,
younger people, right?
Again, it's like I go back to the workshops. It's like if we're speaking with second graders or CEOs, the same rules apply. We're trying to develop a growth mindset, the belief we can grow. We want people to understand fear. We're doing all the same things.
Right.
Now, I think one tip I have, especially in the sports world for young athletes, it's the most important thing we need to develop early on is, mm-hmm, the love for the game.
Mm.
Because like the logic is pretty simple. If I love this sport and playing this sport, I'm going to invest more time in learning the actual tactics and,
right,
and putting in the work and reps to get
kind of
better.
Focus on the enjoyment first and,
yeah,
then
and
through
it,
doing that.
And it's like we can build real enjoyment. It doesn't like they show up to practice, we play tag all the time. It's,
right,
like we're having fun, but it's like through playing the sport and learning to love it,
mm-hmm,
we're creating a better fuel source again. And so my best advice is, especially when players are young, It's find ways to help them really enjoy playing and see like the value of the sport. And once they have that, then we can work on more of the technique and teaching of the plays and all of that stuff. So a question I've been getting a lot of in the streets as we walk around, like, okay, Learner Lab is dropping and it's like a hot topic in the world. Just kidding. But a question that people ask is like, why learning? Like, why are we calling it Learner Lab? What's the focus there?
Right. I think the simple explanation is we both think that learning is a hugely important skill.
Yeah.
And it's one with massive spillover. So anything that we do in life, any skill that we're trying to build, that has to deal with learning. And
sure.
We think that if you try to sort of learn how to be a better learner,
yeah,
that's going to spill over into every aspect of your
life.
We
see it as like a foundational skill. It's like, if I'm a good learner, I'm going to be better at learning to write, learning to code, learning to lead,
right,
learning
to do anything,
whatever. If I know sort of the mechanics of learning, it's to me, like, I like how you say it's a spillover skill.
Right. Well, that's kind of where then the lab comes in, right?
Yeah,
then we dig into all of this research and everything that's there to try and figure out how we can apply
absolutely
the science.
Valuable skill, something that we can deploy across the board. It's valuable for anyone.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we picked it. And selfishly, it's like we want to get better at it too.
Right, right.
So like we're using this podcast as an excuse to reach out to people way smarter than us and get better at a useful skill. It was also happened to be a name that was available. The domain was available. So we hopped on it. So yeah, that's what we're here to do. It could morph into lots of different things. And we don't really have a plan other than let's dig into good stuff that can help us grow.
Right.
If you guys have any questions, please give us a call. The hotline is open 24/7. You just leave a voicemail and we'll answer it in the next episode. What's that number?
805-635-8459.
Boom. See you next week.